The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
All right, Derek, one game in the books.
And it's all over.
Yeah, it's all over.
The drop goes on.
Yeah, it's panic mode, and
I'm a Warriors fan now.
Jumping off the bandwagon already, right?
I want to win.
And even they lost. Even they lost their first game.
Life is unfair, and then you die. Anyway.
We kind of knew this was going to happen, though, right? If the Wolves lost the first game, and, you know, I think everybody was going to kind of lose their cool, and you know, every all of a sudden we're gonna, you know, blow everything up, and oh, this is terrible, and you know, they shouldn't have gotten rid of Ricky Rubio, and all. Like, I just, as I was looking over the game, because unfortunately I wasn't able to watch the game from start to finish, but
that's debatable.
From what I got, my takeaway from the game was just, this is kind of what a team that hasn't played together well enough, or hasn't played together long enough.
Exactly.
This is what we're going to see. And it's going to be tough. You know, people, again, they're not going to want to hear this, and they're going to say, wow, you said this last year. Well, yeah. I mean,
making major changes, and you don't have to worry about major changes taking time to adjust, or adjusting to them, rather.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm not panicking yet. I'm not worried. It's one game, and you know, I think if we get a month into this thing and we're still kind of seeing the same old things, then yeah, I think it is time to probably, I guess, panic per se, or you know, get worked up about it, but. If you look around the entire league, Derek, everybody's kind of looking like this. Everybody's looking out of sorts, and not where you're seeing things and you're seeing the results and you're looking at box scores and you're like, really?
Yeah, I don't know if it's partially due to the shortened preseason and having, you know, just a handful of games to, you know, hopefully get up to speed. And I think we're seeing that, you know, maybe guys aren't, their bodies aren't quite in shape yet. We've had a number of injuries, whether it's, you know, Draymond to Gordon Hayward's horrific injury, or Jeremy Lin's now out for the year.
Yeah.
You know, if teams just, and players don't know how to quite prepare with that truncated preseason now, which is ultimately a good thing, because I mean, preseason basketball is an entertainment. We had 3 weeks of preseason before. You know, we had back-to-backs in preseason, and it was just too much. So, I mean, I think ultimately that's a good thing, but figuring out how to, you know, manage players and player health going in and just getting everyone prepared is a tough thing. And for a team like the Timberwolves, I mean, I think it'd be a mistake to look at last night as a referendum on the 2018 Timberwolves. I mean, I know there's a lot of excitement, and people kind of wanted to use last night's game as a springboard with a win, you know, with the excitement they had coming in. And it's ultimately, when you have three new starters, it's going to take time. I mean, you have a brand new point guard. You have such a big piece like Jimmy Butler, which, I mean, I thought it was cool to see Jimmy Butler as a Timberwolf. I mean, at times he looked like the second point guard on the floor, which was neat to see. I think that's what Thibodeau really tried to do with Andrew Wiggins last year. And now we have the real thing. And there's just so much potential there. And it's, you saw so many weird things that are like, oh, this isn't normal. You know, you watch Taj Gibson or Jimmy Butler or Jeff Teague with their other teams, and you didn't see things, you know, like Cat running into Teague on a pick and roll, or, you know, guys not knowing, you know, who to close out on, and or missing a rotation here or there. I mean, that's just stuff that comes with continuity, playing together, and chemistry. And fortunately, that's a crappy answer for Wolves fans, but it's just going to take more time.
Yeah, and if you look at, like you said, it with Jimmy sort of being the second point guard on the floor, that's something that Cat and Wiggins also have to adjust to, because
they've probably never had that.
They've never had that, because with Ricky Rubio being there, the ball was in Ricky's hands all the time, and he was the one who was putting putting the other four guys on the floor in spots to where they can succeed or get off a good shot. And now it's a different look now. Now you've got a couple guys out there now that are sort of trying to make plays and for other people and make plays for themselves. So I don't think there's anything wrong with either style, but this is the style that Tom Thibodeau wants to play, and this is the style that these players have to adjust to. And I think once they go through the course of the season, I think you're going to start seeing them play a lot better, and I think you're going to start seeing more chemistry on the floor. But when you have three new starters, like you said, it's going to take some time. I mean, and I'm not, you know, people are going to listen to what the comparison I'm going to make here, and they're going to say, oh, no, what are you talking about? But the Warriors, look at what happened to the Warriors last year. The Spurs go in on opening night and wipe the floor with them.
They trounce them.
Just blew them out of Oracle Arena, out of their own arena. Just blew them out. And, you know, and what happened last year? People were all, well, you know, the Warriors, hey, maybe this is. And they were fine. They won the title. So, and I'm not saying the Wolves should be front runners to win the title because they lost to the Spurs last night. That's not the point I'm trying to make here. Okay. But I just think we have to be careful not to put so much stock into opening night. Opening night is fun. People are excited because the season is starting, but they play 82 of these things, man. Every team plays 82 of these games. So
you can't get too high or too low.
Yeah. I think it's fair to look at Jeff Teague's performance last night and say that it could have been better. I think it's fair to say that defensively it could have been much better on his end.
My thing with Teague last night, it was like, we know that he can be such a scoring minded point guard.
Yeah.
And it took him a while to even get on the board, which is very atypical of Jeff Teague. And it seemed like he was taking time, you know, adjusting as well. And it was just so apparent in that sense. And one thing the team that I always come back to prove, you know, with the talent that it takes to integrate and just to get it all on the same page, the Miami Heat, the big three, they weren't the flying death machine until January.
Yeah.
When their defense came together and everything. So, I mean, it takes time, and especially when you're dealing with significant pieces like this. And, you know, even like Gorgui Dieng, who's been here for 4 years, coming off the bench looked weird for him. I mean, last night he was practically useless because he just seemed so lost and coming off the bench rather than, you know, being out there from the opening tap.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I think that there's so many adjustments that I think everybody on the team has to make at this point, and they're going to make those adjustments. So I'm not worried about what do you think of Belly last night?
He was aggressive. I think that was one of the big things that really stood out to me. I mean, he was down low, you know, cutting to the basket. I mean, those were all good things. And he wasn't trying to do too much. And I think that's the nice thing when you have that influx of talent, is that you take a guy like Bielitsa, instead of kind of asking him to do more than he probably should, he's in a smaller role. I mean, he still struggled from the floor overall. He was 3-for-8 from the field. He did hit one of his 2 3-pointers, which is, you know, always a nice little benefit there. But, I mean, he's probably that type of player. Probably can't start him, but I think he certainly should be getting minutes over Shabazz Muhammad. Shabazz looked awful again. He hasn't looked good in 9 months.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, I don't know. You know, I wonder, too, with Shabazz, and again, we're just one game into the season at this point, but I wonder, I just wonder how long you can keep playing him. If this is the Shabazz we're going to get, and this is kind of the Shabazz we've been getting for, you know, like you said, basically nine months.
Yeah.
I just don't know how much more you can keep playing him and keep putting him out there if he's not gonna pass much and he's not gonna knock down shot. We've talked about this so many times with Shabazz, right? If Shabazz could find a niche. Just find a skill that he can do really, really, really well. And I have constantly said, if Shabazz could be a knockdown three-point shooter, especially from the corners,
he'd be a $15 million a year player.
Yes, but we don't see it, and we're 4 years into this thing, and we're not. Well, now he's into year five, and we're just not seeing any of that, and we're not seeing it consistently. And I just don't. I know it, we kind of got to the end of the off season, and it was just kind of that question of, well, is Shabazz going to come back because nobody else has signed him, and the Wolves have another roster spot open. And I guess there was kind of some excitement with getting him back, and oh, it's nice to have Shabazz back, but
it's a relationship of convenience, I think, for both sides.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know, man. I will say I do think the bench is still a little bit of a concern, even after just one game. And Jamal Crawford, I thought, was pretty good last night. I thought he did pretty well.
Man, he is stressful. I mean. I've watched him, and he's always been that no, yes shot guy when he takes the shot. But, man, having him on the team that you're covering is stressful like that. But he was still pretty efficient. I mean, he's not going to shoot 60% all year long, but he can handle the ball. He did have one bad turnover down the stretch, but he finished with, what, 5 assists, 3 boards. Was actually a +5, which was nice. I mean, I think not having Shabazz Muhammad as your lead bench scorer is ultimately a benefit. And I don't think Gorgie Jang is going to struggle all year long. Tyus Jones looks solid. I don't think either point guard was great last night. To say Tyus Jones was better than Jeff Teague isn't really saying a lot, I think,
right,
either way, ultimately. But yeah, Jamal Crawford, I mean, if in 24 minutes, I mean, those are 24 good minutes that he gave.
Yeah, he was a positive, I think, if anything. So, I mean, I think that worked out good for him, too. You mentioned Tyus. It's so tough because you look at the numbers and the numbers aren't there. But you know he did some good things in the second half. Teague obviously didn't play in the fourth quarter, which I think raised a lot of eyebrows. But I think to Tibbs' credit, he kind of went with what was working. I think the only concern is that if this becomes a regular thing, then you do kind of look at Jeff Teague and say, okay, well, why did we bring him here if we're not going to be able to, you know, if these are the kind of games we're going to have, why did we bring him here? Now, I don't know. We're one game into this thing, so I don't know if this is going to continue. My guess is that it won't continue like this, but
same.
Yeah, but you do just kind of wonder, okay, well, you did give Jeff Teague a good chunk of money, and, you know, it wasn't to sit for the entire fourth quarter. So, I don't know. It's weird, but it was nice to see Tyus out there, you know, being sort of a plus. I don't think he overwhelmed anybody, but, you know, he was okay. I think he was solid. He helped get them back into the game when they were down by about
13 at most.
13.
I can't remember when that. It was sometime in the second half.
Yeah.
But then they actually took a lead with about 4 to go. So, yeah, it was a solid effort before going 0 for 9. The Spurs finished the game on an 11-4 run, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's the other thing, too. I think a lot of people are looking at Kawhi not playing. Certainly, with Kawhi out, it was a winnable game for the Wolves. But the Spurs, man, they do this, man. This is what they do. I mean, they
it's like Jim Peterson said, they don't run a lot of complicated stuff. They just run the simple stuff to perfection. And that's what's just the difference there. And I was watching, I was like, oh, they still have Rudy Gay.
Yeah.
Oh, LaMarcus Aldridge is going to hit from three, the mid-range, crash the lane for dunks. I mean, Towns got posted up twice by Gasol and Aldridge. And those guys just made shots. Towns was in perfect position, perfect fundamental technique, and they just made shots. I mean, there's not much you can do when guys are just cooking.
And let's not forget, too, this Spurs team that didn't have Kawhi Leonard last night or Tony Parker, this is the same collection of Spurs players, you know, sans Rudy Gay, that blew the Rockets out of the water in Game 6 last year in the second round. with no Kawhi Leonard and no, I don't even think Tony Parker didn't even play. I think Tony Parker was already hurt at that point.
Well, let's not pretend like Tony Parker is still, you know, prime Tony Parker.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. Great point. Great point.
So that kind of, I mean, that kind of sort of diminishes it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
The disappointment, I think.
Yeah. So I you know, like I said, the Spurs, this is what they do, man. That this is why Pop is, like, in my opinion, the greatest coach ever, because he just, this is what he does, man. He knows how to do this. He knows how to coach a team. He knows how to have a team ready to play, even when, you know, their best player is out and they still have enough good players already. So,
and I think it certainly helps playing in a friendly environment. I think being on home versus, you know, in Minnesota, you know, as you think about it, you know, if the Wolves took the lead at home with 4 minutes to go, the crowd would have been into it. It's a completely different environment to play in.
Yeah.
Rather than being at home and, you know, being able to make the comeback and having your fans behind you rather than your opponents.
Yeah. Okay. We had a guest this week, and we actually talked to her a little bit earlier this week. Someone we've been trying to get on for quite a while, and she just recently did a piece on Karl Anthony Towns and the Wolves and sort of the outlook for them. And the headline of her piece was actually "Meet Your 2020 NBA Champions, the Minnesota Timberwolves," which I thought was pretty cool and interesting. C-Rat Sohi joins us here on the Raised by Wolves podcast in just a moment. Raised by Wolves, by the way, is sponsored by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. All right, she is a freelance NBA writer for ESPN and The Athletic in Toronto. She's also done work with the Bleacher Report, Fansided, Rolling Stone. She is quite the NBA writer, and we've been trying to get her on this podcast for quite a while. And finally, we were able to do it. Scheduling worked out for everybody. And C-Rat Sohi is on the Raised by Wolves podcast. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for coming on with us. We appreciate it. And you just recently put out a piece on Karl Anthony Towns and the Wolves. And just tell us about how that sort of came about, and just tell us about your piece that you put together.
Well, so Vice Sports was for its NBA preview doing a series on the five teams that in the year 2020 could beat the Warriors. And the Wolves are one of them because of their youth and largely because of Karl Anthony Towns, because of how dynamic and offensive and defensive player he is. And, you know, he's historically given the Warriors problems because, you know, he's not easily neutralized. So it was just a perfect fit there for the Wolves.
And what have you seen from Towns, really, you know, just from your own perspective on, you know, just how great a player he can be? Because there's, I mean, people have been sort of throwing out so many different things about him. And obviously, I think he needs to get better on defense a little bit. And, you know, but people have kind of compared him. Derek, we've been seeing it all the time on Twitter where people say, well, you know, who would you want, him or Embiid? And, you know, they're just comparing him to so many guys. And so from your perspective, C-Rat, how do you know, what's your overall thought on Towns and where he's at right now?
Well, offensively, I think he's probably one of the most complete players in the league. Definitely at his position, he can go in the low post. He's being touch out to the arc. He's a good passer. He's a good face up game. He has height. He's long. He's athletic. He can get around guys. I mean, there's not really much more that you can really ask for him on offense, other than, you know, just the slight refinements that come with improving your game every year. As we know that Towns is a stickler about, he's one of the hardest working guys in the league, and that's why I think he gives the Warriors so many problems, because he's not really a guy that can be easily neutralized like a lot of the bigger guys in the league can. It kind of you know, if they were to go to their death lineup and have their tallest guy be Draymond Green at 6'8", that's actually a problem with a guy like Towns, because he can actually punish you offensively even against a good, strong defender like Draymond. So, you know, that's one of the bigger reasons that I think he gives them problems. You can't take off of him either. There's no real way to stop his attack other than to double-team him. he can be a strong defender. He definitely has all the tools, and he has a basketball IQ. I think last year, I'm hoping, was a bit of an anomaly, just as far as trying to understand Thibodeau's system goes, and not having maybe some of the stuff that we run into with rookies and defense, just them not really grasping the concept, caught up to him a little bit. But, you know, he's going into his third year now. He's going to be with Jimmy Butler, who is one of the best defenders in the league, and obviously Thibodeau is known as a defensive guru. So, you know, hopefully he just finds a way to improve on what we saw in his rookie year and, you know, forget last year, really.
I like that you brought up that Warriors game from April a couple of years ago, because Timberwolves fans haven't had much to get excited about, but beating the Warriors and kind of really making them really work for that 73rd win was a cool moment for fans, and Shabazz Muhammad had a bunch of points. But I like that you brought up that possession with Curry, and I thought it was kind of an interesting theory where you managed to not apologize for Towns' defense about how, you know, maybe the lesser players on the team struggled with the concept of Thibodeau's defense more, and as a result, Towns had more to clean up. I thought that's kind of an interesting perspective on that.
Right. I do think some of that was definitely happening just with Garnett not being there. And, you know, particularly Wiggins, I thought, regressed defensively last year in a way that I wasn't really expecting him to. I don't think anybody was. He was touted as a defensive stopper at the least when he came into the league. And I think, you know, early on, that's kind of what he showed. So it was a weird anomaly year for hopefully an anomaly for him too. So, you know, I think, given the right situation, both those guys should be good defenders just based on their tools. I mean, Wiggins doesn't necessarily have the basketball IQ of Towns, but he definitely has better defensive instincts, I think, than he has offensive instincts. I mean, at least, you know, if you weren't to talk about his offensive talent, but just the way he approaches the game.
I think one thing that was interesting is that you talked to Tayshaun Prince, and I was wondering what Tayshaun Prince was up to, and I had no idea he was an executive assistant or something for the Memphis Grizzlies right now. How did you get connected to Tayshaun? Because that just seemed kind of random to me, but that was one of those guys that was there to kind of help guide them along with KG and Andre Miller that year.
Oh, well, I was just trying to reach out to as many Wolves people as possible, and I wasn't able to get in touch with anybody in time just because they were in China, and it was just impossible to reach logistically and, you know, just with how busy they were out there. They have so many more media obligations. So my second route was trying to get in touch with former players, and, you know, Tayshaun was willing to talk. I just I reached out to the Memphis PR, and yeah, they just got me in touch with him. He seemed pretty enthusiastic to chat about that team and about Towns and Wiggins.
How much can the defensive mindsets of guys like Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson have, you know, how much effect can they have on these two guys? Because I think when you look at this roster, obviously getting Jimmy here was such a big thing, just because of how good a player he is, obviously. But when you look at Wiggins and Towns and the amount of potential that they have, you kind of get the sense that guys like Jimmy and Taj can really help those guys sort of kick it in gear on that next level defensively. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, that's a big question, right? Like, that's what everybody's hoping will happen. I can't really speak to whether it will. I think it's going to be up to those guys and their relationships with each other and whether they connect. But yeah, that's definitely what you hope will happen. I will say, I mean, Tayshaun, when he was talking about Wiggins, he was saying that Towns, they both worked incredibly hard, but Towns was a guy who would more often go to the players for help. He was obviously always going to Kevin Garnett at that time to get whatever he could from him. And Wiggins was more likely to be somebody who went to the coaching staff. And, you know, if Wiggins could maybe open up and actually go to a guy like Butler for guidance, like the way that Towns did, I think that would be helpful. Because, I mean, if you look at Wiggins, his ceiling is kind of, like, his defensive ceiling is Butler. And I think offensively, in a lot of ways, his ceiling is slightly higher than his. But at the end of the day, if he ends up being what Butler is, I don't think anybody can complain about that.
Do you get the sense, I mean, everybody is predicting playoffs with this team. I think everybody's expecting playoffs with this team, but provided they get there, which I think everybody believes they will, what would be satisfactory, I think, or what's a reasonable thought, I guess, on what they do in the playoffs, reasonable expectation, reasonable accomplishment in the postseason of where fans should be reasonably happy, I guess, if that makes sense.
Besides
I
making the playoffs?
Right. I mean, I know I kind of threw a lot out at you there, but
right.
It just... Because what me and Derek has kind of experienced, or what we're learning with fans here, is that, you know, the sky is either falling or the sky is, like, clear and blue and beautiful. So, I mean, I guess where from your standpoint, is, like, a happy medium, I guess, in between that?
You know, I think there's no shame in them being a first round out. I think, obviously, that might depend on who they're playing, but if you look at anybody else that's in the playoff picture, there's losing 4 out of 7 to any team that makes the playoffs in the West is, you know, there's really no shame in that. I think it's more about how they play, whether, you know, they are coming in ready to go. If they're, first of all, I think one of the big things with Minnesota is their crunch time play. So is it like, Are they showing up in the fourth quarter? I know that's that's one of the more tired cliches, but it definitely applies with the Wolves, given their woes in that area. And you know, they fight hard, and can they take enough lessons back that they come back improved next year? It's more about getting reps, I think, for them. They really need to make the playoffs for sure. But you know, I don't really have too many expectations for them once they get there. The West is incredibly strong, and this team is incredibly young. They don't need to start now, but the sky is definitely the limit. So, I mean, it's kind of like one thing that would be nice is maybe if they had a showing like how Westbrook and Durant had against the Lakers, and I think it was 2010. And the Lakers went on to win the championship that year, and Durant and KD really, they gave him a challenge. And I think that's got to be the Wolves' baseline there. You got to just give whoever you're playing the best that you have. And, you know, if they lose, that's kind of to be expected in most cases.
You know, I'm glad you brought up crunch time, because that's been a problem here in recent years. And I mean, as much as we love Ricky Rubio, we all saw how defenses would just sag off him. And, you know, they're almost, you know, on giving their team a power play by just having him on the floor, because he was just not a threat offensively. Do you think Jeff Teague helps that? I mean, I'm glad you brought up some of the good things that Jeff Teague does, because, I mean, Jeff Teague right now is kind of fallen into the not being Ricky Rubio, and therefore fans don't like him. But there could be kind of a way for him to make crunch time a little easier in that sense.
Yeah, I think Jeff Teague really brings dynamism to the Wolves that Rubio didn't, just because he was so limited offensively. Teague's he's not the best shooter in the world, but he's not somebody that teams are going to be going under screens and sagging down low like the way they did with Rubio. You know, even if whether he's playing off the ball or on the ball, he's only a guy where when he's open, he can drill down shots with consistency, and he's got a really good dribble drive game. And you know, he can snake into a lane. He can make the drive and kick pass. He can find guys. And you know, it's just like another thing that they have against defenses when they really start to lock in, is just, you know, being probably a tertiary creator, given how many creators that there are on the Wolves. But you know, I think you're running into this problem a little bit with Taj Gibson, that the ball is kind of getting funneled down to him. At least that's what I've seen in the preseason. And Teague's not really a guy where you want to be funneling the shots down to him. Like, he's a strong enough offensive option that he will punish you when you do that. So that's something that I think should really help them generally in their offense, but also when the game tightens up.
You get the sense Tom Thibodeau is the right guy for this team, because it's, I mean, I think he's fine. I think he's done a pretty decent job considering what he was taking over. He took over such a young team with really hardly any experience last year, and now he's got Now he's gotten a chance to bring in some veterans, and he still has a good mix of young players too. But do you feel like, you know, what's your take on Tibbs so far and a year into this thing, and now that he's gotten a chance to sort of mold this roster more to his liking?
Yeah, I think this is going to be the big year for him that kind of shows whether he's supposed to be a guy that has this much power or whether he's better suited as a tactician. Because, you know, let's be honest, it was a disappointment last year. Tibbs is a defensive coach, and the team wasn't playing any defense.
Right.
And, you know, for all of the talent that they had offensively, they definitely weren't maximizing on it, which is not really something you'd expect with Thibodeau, like, knowing that he's a defensive coach. But when he's not even bringing that part, that the other side starts to stick out a little bit more too. So, you know, I think now we're kind of in a place where I like how the Wolves' offense has looked so far. I know it was just preseason, but you know they're moving it around, and you know, the ball's going down low to Towns a lot more, which is one of the problems I had with Rubio, is that I think the ball kind of just stuck in his hands too much when he was on the court. It was kind of like the Chris Paul thing, well, you know, except he's Ricky Rubio and not Chris Paul. And I really like the way that it's moving around. So I think, you know, it seems like offensively they're going to have the firepower to, even if they aren't the most creative team, they're going to be pretty strong. So it's just a matter of getting everybody to buy into the scheme and understand the scheme. And yeah, if we really hit a second year in a row where this doesn't happen, the Timberwolves are disappointing, then you really have to question it, because if he can't make the one thing that that breads his butter, then, I mean, that's obviously a problem.
You know, not to go, you know, ADD and all over the place here, but circling back to Wiggins quick, because I didn't know that you watched Wolves preseason, and I should have been a good podcast co-host and asked ahead of time. But so when I watched Andrew Wiggins, I mean, not only did he look noticeably bigger, and I mean, just like he had a mass, and he looked like he even like grew an inch or something, although I have no idea if he did, but just seeing him crashing the boards and, you know, going aggressively for those putbacks. I mean, there was really none of that passivity that people were, you know, complaining about in recent years. Mm-hmm. And the fact that him and Jimmy Butler didn't seem to be awkwardly trying to fit in the same space. What did you see from Wiggins that might be a little different or encouraging in some way?
Yeah, I think I saw a lot of the same. Like there was especially like one really, really nice baseline drive where he just like tomahawked it in the half court. Like, you thought that he was going to just take the three, but he waited for the closeout and just ripped into the defense, and that was really nice. I think I still have some problems with his shot selection that showed up in the preseason. He just, it's about maximizing what you have on the team as a whole, and that means that you don't necessarily take the first shot that comes your way. And I think Wiggins is, you know, for all of his passiveness, is kind of programmed that way, or to just like take the dribble pull up. And
like, I think he took 4 threes per game in preseason. That's not Andrew Wiggins.
Right. And the stroke is looking good too. And, you know, the other, like, it's just a matter of really, really being diligent about finding the right spots. I think that's a hard thing to beat out of your game, especially as a young player that's starting to find his offensive game. So it is going to take some time, but I think that's really the biggest thing for him. Like, you just can't be throwing away shots, especially when you do have these lofty expectations for yourself, because that's when it becomes like every possession really does matter. And that's going to be a thing for this team, I think, because they're young and they're used to losing. I don't think they're really used to being in too many high stakes situations. So just realizing that, you know, every single little thing will end up affecting them, because they do have playoff aspirations, and their record will bode on how well they do there, likely.
Did you notice any differences in differences defensively? I mean, it's sometimes it's hard to judge when you're playing the Warriors, because they're just such a, you know, methodical, surgical offense that they just find so many different ways to score. But did you see any improvements defensively from, you know, from Wiggins in particular and Towns?
I think for the most part, it was kind of a bit of a repeat of what you saw with the Wolves a couple of years ago, and that I think Towns seemed a lot more comfortable defensively when Taj was on the floor with him.
Okay.
That's definitely something that I noticed. And just, you know, I think a lot of it was also the Wolves were making their first few rotations, which will get you through defensively against almost any other team. But it's just, you know, when you're playing the Warriors, they're just going to keep beating at you and beating at you. And they're a team that they do it to everybody. So,
yeah.
You know, that is definitely what you're aspiring to. You're aspiring to stop them. But it's kind of a bad test case, I think. Like, for Wiggins, what I saw was kind of like, mostly paying attention when he was guarding Durant, and that wasn't really going well for him. But at the same time, like, there were moments where he was taking it back at him pretty well too. And there's also the argument that the best thing you can do against a great player is to continually make him work. So yeah, I didn't see anything, and like, to be quite honest with you, I wasn't really zeroing in on Wiggins' defense in particular, but you know, unlike season's past, there wasn't anything that really stuck out to me in a bad way either, so that's probably good.
So what you're saying is the Wolves, like you said in your piece, they're going to win the title in 2020, right?
Yeah.
I think we're cool. I think we're cool with that. I think, I think people are pretty excited to hear that. So,
I mean, let's speed it up a little bit. Let's make it this year. Let's just, why waste time, right? Let's cut to the chase.
Expedite it. Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to say everyone's going to get injured. They'll all get suspended for something not illegal. Yeah. And the Wolves will just roll to the title.
Right. I think it's really boom or bust there. I think you're onto something.
You can find her work on The Athletic, on ESPN, and various other outlets as well. C-Rat Zohi, thank you so much. Thanks for coming on with us. It's been a long time coming.
I'm glad we could finally make this happen.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So thanks to C-Rat Zohi for joining us this week. Good stuff there. If you get a chance to read her piece, check it out on the Wolves. Really, really good, exciting read.
If you don't follow her on Twitter, her handle is legendary, Damian Trillard.
Yes, and she's a great follow on Twitter.
And she's hilarious.
Yeah, she's awesome.
And probably one of the best writers out there, smartest basketball minds out there. So definitely give her a follow, read her stuff. She writes for everybody. So do that.
Yeah, most definitely. Okay, so before we get out of here, we got to recap some of the other sort of news and notes from the NBA this week.
It's been a busy few days.
Yeah, it's been crazy. And the Gordon Hayward injury, I think, is kind of maybe the biggest one, just because how it happened, you know. Well, first of all, because of what happened, how it happened, when it happened, and what it could mean for the Celtics going forward, at least for this year. I just, more than anything, I feel for him, man. I mean, that just sucks. Not even five and a half minutes into your season, and it's done off of just a simple, you know, alley-oop play, and then, you know, you break your ankle, man. It just sucks.
Yeah, it's just such a horrific way to have your season end, too. I mean, not that there's really a great way to have your season end on the opening night, but oh, that was especially gruesome. I'd actually managed to avoid seeing any pictures of it, videos, until my buddy sent a group text out to me and his brother saying, oh, I don't think ankles are supposed to bend this way. And I was like, damn it, dude, I wasn't trying to see this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy when it happened. You could see, I mean, yeah, Kevin Harlan, who's calling the game with Reggie Miller, he knew it right away. As soon as Hayward landed on the ground, he's just like, oh, Hayward's broken his leg. He's broken his leg. And then you just look at it. It's kind of over by the Cavs bench where it happened, and you could just see the guys on the bench. They're like turning away like, oh, my God. Like, you know, and it's just like, man, dude, that just sucks. And for me, just as an NBA fan and a basketball fan, I wanted to see the Celtics at full strength with Gordon Hayward. I wanted to see Gordon Hayward and Kyrie play together, and I wanted to see how that, you know, I figured it was going to be something that would take some time, because the Celtics, I mean, you want to talk about a team that has new players. I mean, that's like 60% of the roster is new players. But man, it just sucks because I really wanted to see how that was going to look over the course of the year, and now we're going to have to wait. We're going to have to wait a year to even see that, and who knows if Gordon Hayward will even be the same player. I hope he is. I hope he can come back from it, but God, it just sucks, man.
Yeah, and I watched the second half of that game, so I missed seeing the injury live, fortunately. Yeah. But I think Jason Tatum showed a lot. Jaylen Brown showed a lot. I mean, Jason Tatum is not afraid of any shot. Right. I mean, his shot selection is very questionable. I know that sounds funny coming from a guy who covers Andrew Wiggins, but man, does Jason Tatum love to shoot. But he's going to be a fun player. His game is already very polished. I mean, they have Terry Rozier who's coming in to be a player. So even if they don't contend, I still think the Celtics are at least an interesting team. But yeah, it would have been fun to see the Celtics potentially push the Cavs and maybe even come out of the East. Who knows what would have happened had Hayward stayed healthy.
Yeah, it's just one of those kind of wonder what ifs type of thing as we go through the course of the year. All right, so we'd be remiss if we don't mention the Chicago Bulls. Seems like we've been talking about the Bulls a lot on this podcast for some, obviously because of the Jimmy trade, and we had Sean Hyken on, you know, earlier this year and whatnot. But man, dude, that Bobby Portis, dude, what the hell? Like what is going on with that, man? How does that happen? What are they doing over there, man?
Well, it sounded like there were a couple of possessions they play the same position, so they're probably guarding each other.
Yeah.
And I guess there were a couple of possessions in practice that got heated, and you know, I don't think either guy is innocent here. I feel terrible that, you know, Nico is in the hospital.
Yeah.
Over this, but maybe don't start the fight.
Right.
Or don't do your part in escalating it. And Bobby Portis shouldn't have thrown a punch. No. I mean, I don't think there's anyone here who is excused from, you know, any sort of blame around here. But it's such a bizarre situation. And someone on Twitter is like, well, maybe they should suspend him longer just, you know, to help tanking. It's like, well, based on Bobby Portis' career so far, you could argue that playing Bobby Portis is just as good of a tanking move as suspending him longer. But it's... Yeah, I mean, we'd heard about practice fights, and it was funny. John Paxson was talking about players throwing punches in practice and, you know, really just kind of admonishing Bobby Portis for it. It's like, wait a minute, you played with notorious teammate puncher Michael Jordan.
Right.
Who got into it with Steve Kerr, Will Perdue, and once mercilessly bullied Bill Cartwright for having small hands simply because he was traded for his buddy Charles Oakley. I mean, John Paxson is probably the last guy to talk about that, but yeah, it's bizarre. I mean, the news broke, I think we're all just like, what? I mean, all Twitter had the same, you know, WTF reaction.
Yeah, man, it's I mean, we all kind of knew the Bulls were going to be a bad team going in this year just because of, you know, who they lost. I mean, you trade away Jimmy Butler, one of the best players in the league. And, you know, you're getting Zach LaVine in return, but Zach is coming off the injury and he's not going to be ready to go right away here.
Chris Dunn's hurt, and that was one of the pieces that they got in that trade as well.
Yeah.
Even though, I mean, he's not like an impact player, you know, who moves the needle a lot. But, I mean, he has a use on the defensive end for sure. And that lineup, and I mean, Lauri Markkanen's going to be starting now, which is... you know, going to make for a really interesting Chicago lineup. I don't think it'd be watchable, but it's at least interesting in some way.
Yeah, it's it just looks like a 17-65 type of situation, man. Just because there's already not really a whole lot of talent on the roster aside from like a LaVine and a Dunn,
Robin Lopez,
yeah, and Robin Lopez and that sort of thing. But now you've got this sort of situation that comes about, and you just wonder about are people getting along over there, man? You know, I mean, you know, Fred Hoiberg, all due respect to him, because I like Fred Hoiberg, but is he the right guy to sort of manage a situation like this where it could be kind of a toxic locker room? I don't know. I'm not. I mean, Bobby Portis is only suspended for 8 games, so when he comes back, you know, what's going to happen there? I don't know, man, but it could be, it could potentially be pretty ugly. So
I don't think we hold up the Bulls as, you know, the bastion for organizational harmony here. I mean,
right.
And this is, it's so bizarre. I think just everything in Chicago, and this just seems fitting for the Bulls, unfortunately.
Yeah. All right. So any overall final thoughts to put a capper on this first sort of couple days of the season before we get out of here?
Oh, Ben Simmons and the Sixers are fun.
Yes.
I mean, Joel Embiid, I mean, it was good to see him play extended minutes, and he looked incredible last night. But Ben Simmons is, his passes are fun and exciting, but I mean, the cool thing, we both have talked about how he doesn't have much of a jump shot. And it hasn't really held him back, or at least it didn't last night against the Wizards, which was fun to see. I mean, it doesn't really matter when you're so much quicker, you can handle the ball, and you're just longer than everyone, too. There were lots of times he just got to the rack and just elevated over guys simply because they couldn't reach the shot to block it. I mean, he's a special player, and I think that Sixers team is going to be fun and good.
Yeah, they should be. A couple thoughts for me. The Suns are brutal. I mean, you lose by 48 at home. And again,
the Bulls might have competition for worse than the league.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's just, again, one game. We're one game into the season. There's 81 more to go for a lot of these teams. But, man, you're the Suns, and you lose by 48 at home to Portland to start the year, man. That's just ish. And the other one is, I am really worried about this Boogie Brow thing, man. I'm wondering. I thought when they made that trade last year, you know, right at the All-Star break, I thought, man, it's going to take some time for them to gel, but man, when they do, it's going to be
awesome.
I
feel like their floor with Drew Holiday should be 40 wins. Like, that should be their floor. And
yeah,
I don't think that's at all a guarantee. And I just look at this team and it's like, why don't you just work? And that's not how basketball works, but you look at it like, this should just work.
Yeah, it's like Boogie is amazing, and Anthony Davis is amazing, and they're playing together, and they're on the front court, and they both have just a ridiculous set of skills. Why isn't it working? I just, I don't know.
I mean, their bench kind of sucks.
That's true.
I mean, they have Dante starting. I mean, their bench is Ian Clark, Darius Miller, Tony Allen, Jordan Crawford. It's not ideal.
And Etuan Moore was the other guard that started for him, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So I don't know. A lot of work to do down there in New Orleans, but lots more basketball to go over the course of the season. Of course, me and Derek will be with you guys every step of the way, or every week here on the Raised by Wolves podcast. Season's underway, so we're going back.
And are
every
we Facebook
week.
Living from the game tomorrow?
I think we should do that. I think we should try and do that.
That'd be a good time. The Rubio return.
Yeah, we might get a little Facebook Live after the Wolves home opener last night.
So like the 1500 ESPN page on Facebook.
Yeah, keep a lookout for that.
As if you haven't already.
We'll try and get that done. You can find the Raised by Wolves podcast on iTunes. Just search Raised by Wolves. Give us a favorable rating. Find us at podcastone.com and, of course, 1500ESPN.com. Follow Derek at DerekJamesNBA if you haven't already. Follow me on Twitter at MannyHill84. For Derek, I am Manny. Basketball is back. We'll talk to you next week.